Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Economy in free fall, unpopular wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and growing hardships at home as recession bites.
50, 40, 50, 12.
They use innocent civilians, including children, as human shields, so isn't Hamas also to blame for the very high death toll?
11, 10, 9.
We're going to have endless cycles of violence like this for the next 100 years.
7, 6, 5, 4.
These are war crimes, and Israel should be prosecuted for carrying out its war crimes.
3, 2.
The difference between us and them is that they're happy when civilians are hit.
2, 1. Happy New Year!
Thank God 2008 is gone. Here's Michael Savage, live January 1, 2009. Like everyone else, I guess I was going to do a best of today, but the Middle East is too hot to ignore. Strike kills Hamas leader. Israel demands global monitors. Good luck. Global monitors are as useful as the UN in general. There are other stories to talk about, the economy and many, many other stories that have come my way. I'm going to start with something very light. There's an obscure ex-football player out there named Charles Barkley. Little heard from, former footballer, occasional sports commentator. He was arrested on a DUI claiming he was racing to get oral sex. And I would pay no attention to this, saying just another sports guy, you know, whatever. But I remember that in 2003... I actually debated this clown on CNN about immigration, and strangely enough, although he is African-American, he took the side of illegal aliens and called me names. The debate was going fairly well for several minutes, and then he launched into calling me names. But I got the last shot in. They try to cut me off on CNN. My esteemed team here just found it on YouTube. We're now going to play it for you. Michael Savage versus Charles Barkley. Listen.
Michael's one of them guys who really, really smart, who's a dumbass. Like, he wants, you're really intelligent.
Wait, listen, no, I am jumping in here.
Look,
Michael Savage,
what are you, an ignorant
Michael
basketball
Savage,
player?
Thank you very
you're
much for joining us here
yeah.
today. Sir
yeah,
Charles
you're a dumb
is leaving us again.
Player.
Hey,
go dribble a
both
ball.
Of you, time out. We'll be right back in a moment.
See, you couldn't shine my shoes, Buster. I control room. Didn't want me to be cut off. Those were the days when I was still permitted on television. Now, of course, I'm the Soviet-era underground broadcaster of America. I'm not allowed on any television show. I'm not allowed anywhere in the media. I'm not allowed to be mentioned. In fact, it's said that if a reporter at Fox News mentions me, they get fired. If a producer at Fox News suggests that they have Michael Savage on, they get fired. And, of course, I'm the unmentionable, which is great. I'm worse than Bernie Madoff to the people of the New York Post. For some reason, and I don't know what it is, the Australian interloper hates me. I don't know why. I can't imagine why. Anyway, if you want to talk about strike kills Hamas leader or anything else in the news, there's some very good stories out there. The Middle East is a big deal. Now, Bernie Madoff is a big story. Bernie Madoff... It's true that yesterday by midnight he had to have listed all of his assets, and the government has not yet released this list, even though thousands or tens of thousands of people have been made poor by this alleged thief, the man who stole allegedly $50 billion. He's living in a $9 million apartment, which is astonishing to me. I don't know how this works. Can anyone explain to me why the men behind WorldCom are in jail and this guy is allowed to live in his apartment? I don't think he's going to spend the day in jail, frankly. I think he owns the judges in New York. In fact, the way I think this is working is this. The judge who Madoff went before was probably invested with Madoff. And Madoff, I'm guessing now, could have said to the judge through a third party, if you give him house arrest, we'll make sure that you get your money back. All right, go ahead. You take house arrest. That's fine. What are they going to do something to me? I know Schumer. Schumer's also invested. Are you kidding me? A judge in New York is about as reliable as a judge in San Francisco. There is no, there's no justice, for God's sakes. We live in an oligarchy. Let me explain that to you. There's no greater example of the fact that we live in an oligarchy than the fact that this unknown, useless woman, Caroline Kennedy, who has absolutely no experience whatsoever to be a U.S. senator, is about to become a U.S. senator, is proof that America has become an oligarchy. An oligarchy is a form of government in which the rulers are elected for their wealth, according to Plato. That's correct. In which the rulers are elected for their wealth. There's almost one example after another, frankly, that shows you that we are living in an oligarchy. And I've been talking about this for at least 8 years. So don't tell me I don't know what's going on. 1-800-449-8255. I don't know who would be worse, Bill Clinton or Caroline Kennedy in New York. But frankly, I don't think it much matters. They're just bag men for special interests anyway. So what's the difference to you who becomes a senator? You think it matters? It's all window dressing. Here are some of the headlines on michaelsavage.com. Number one, we've already talked about the Hamas. Isn't it interesting that Israel assassinated a Hamas leader by firing a bomb into his house? They knew where he lived. And don't you think that the Israelis are sending a message to a mad jihad in Iran? I think they're sending a message to a mad jihadist in Iran that they know where he lives. And if he keeps doing the Hitler polka, he's going to be next. And the question is, should Israel stop now? Or should Israel be forced to stop now? Or should Israel go for the jugular vein and cut it off, because otherwise it's never going to end? Then what does it mean for them to win? How do they win? How in the world can they win anyway? How does Israel win here? What do they do to win? How do they stop this? Now, I understand that Hamas is more than a military organization. They say it's also a political and an educational and a welfare organization. Well, that's just on the surface. It sounds like that makes sense. But you got to understand that the Nazi Party in Germany, on which the Hamas organization is based, was exactly all those things as well. Hitler didn't come to power just on the rhetoric that I'm going to take over the world and restore dignity to the German people and kill the Jews. That's not how he came to power. If you study the rise of Adolf Hitler and the rise of the Third Reich, you'll come to understand that it too was both a military type of organization, paramilitary in the beginning, a political organization, a welfare organization. The Nazi Party provided jobs for out-of-work Germans, and that's where most of its support came from, was by providing jobs for unemployed Germans who had been stripped of their economy by the world powers through the League of Nations. It was the greatest mistake, by the way, after World War I, was to bust Germany, make them pay reparations, and destroy the economy of Germany. That's, of course, what laid the groundwork for the rise of Adolf Hitler. Now, I don't know whether we can learn from history or not, but if I were in charge of helping the Palestinian people, it would not be through military help. It would be through economic help. If you were to provide jobs for the people, if you were to provide welfare for the people, if you were to provide hope for the people, it is just possible that the bloodthirsty nature of the Hamas organization could be curtailed. And I don't know whether the UN is capable of it. I kind of doubt it. So if you care to talk about that or any other topic on my website as well, there are some other interesting stories, including this one, which is that there's now talk of bailing out the newspapers. Government aid could save U.S. newspapers. Now, that's an interesting story. The government is not supposed to help newspapers. The media is supposed to be a thorn in the side of the government. How many times have I told you the reason I am never seen on Fox News, CNN, or any of the other cable channels is because they're part of the government media complex. I can prove it in one sentence. They get all of the government guests. I don't. Why do you think senators will go on Fox News and they won't go on the Savage Nation? Why do you think government agents will go on these networks and they won't go on the Savage Nation? Why do you think George Bush gave one interview after another to Brent Baer of Fox News, government media complex? So the cozy relationship between the government and the media is a grave, grave threat to our freedom. The newspapers are supposed to be a thorn in the side of the government, not their best friend. And I told you before, we in the media are supposed to be the watchdogs, not the lapdogs of the government. And so for the government to say they're going to bail out U.S. newspapers is the equivalent of us becoming the ex-Soviet Union in yet another way. In fact, a more profound way. It's one thing to bail out banks, which was bad enough. It's another thing to bail out insurance companies, which become quasi-government organizations. That's even another and even more dangerous. But to see newspapers become owned by the government, having to pay back the favors, will be almost the last blow possible for us to have a free society. And I don't know whether this is by design or by accident, but I am totally opposed to saving local or national newspapers. How about you? 1-800-449-8255. Oh, yes, here's a story out of the ex-United Kingdom. Prisoners should not be called inmates because it might offend them. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. I'm not going to talk about hangovers and hangover recipes. That's so stupid. And if you got drunk and have a hangover, that's your problem, not mine. Why talk about such rubbish? Me, myself, I drank one glass of champagne and went to sleep 8 o'clock. That's all. I didn't hear one firework, thank God. Thank God there was fog. I got so stupid during the day, I thought I'd go out on my boat and look at the fireworks. I got that wacky. I'm glad it was so foggy I couldn't see. I went out about 100 feet. You couldn't see more than 100, 150 feet ahead of you on the fog on the bay yesterday. It was so thick. So admittedly, at 3 in the afternoon, I went out on my little boat, my 20-foot tug, and I went offshore by 100, maybe 100 feet. The shore disappeared. It got a little weird. And I said, if I go 20 more feet, I'm going to lose all visual navigation. So I did. I chickened out. I went back. I didn't want to play, you know, like, where's the shore? And start going in circles. But, you know, I wanted to see what it's like to get lost in fog, frankly, in a safe way. It was like almost a... It was a safe way of getting lost in the fog. I don't know how the guys did it before electronics. How did these sailors circumnavigate the world in fog? I don't know how they did it. I don't know. Sir Francis Drake, you're starting with that. You think about it. How did these guys do it? No depth sounders, no navigation. They had a guy on the bow of the boat with a line and weights. You know, 1 fathom, sir. 2 fathom, sir. No fathom, sir. You got to admire these guys. There's a great article, since you don't want to talk seriously about the Middle East or about me telling Charles Barcliff, if you heard it. It was good. She tried to shout me down after he put me down, but it didn't. Somebody back there didn't want it to happen. There's a fabulous article in the LA Times today about bad places to travel, the worst places, the most overrated places on earth to go to. And it's written not by the people who work for the newspaper, but by readers, and I can't seem to put my hands on it directly. But a couple of them were things like this. Athens, okay, the most overrated travel destinations on earth. And here's one, Athens. Guy writes, I thought long and hard about Athens primarily because my heritage is Greek and my father will probably disown me when he reads this. And then he says, the capital city, population 3.9 million, is Athens. It's crowded and filled with smog and crazy taxi drivers. And he goes on and on and on. And it was really, really well written. Some of this is not the one I wanted. This is a different one. So other places are Dubai. There were 25 of them. Prague is no good. My favorite was the Lima, Peru one, where the people are mean and bitter. They don't like Moscow. Have you been to an overrated place? Another one wrote that Paris is an overrated city. It said, these locals are a proud bunch who suffer no lack of self-esteem. Most of all, the Parisians seem to have an absolute disdain for those who speak English. French waiters seem never to want to speak with me in English, even when it's clear they speak English as well as I, knowing they're trying blah, blah, blah. And they go on saying they didn't like that. It's another overrated place. And I guess the reason I want to do that article on the overrated travel destinations is because anyone listening to this show is obviously a person who didn't travel for the holidays. In other words, you're stuck in a low-paying job, or you're in a prison cell or a bug house, and you're glad that you didn't go anywhere. But that's one of the reasons I like reading it. It's not that I couldn't go there. I didn't want to go there because I know well enough to know there's nowhere for me to go. It's all the same. And nothing can compete with my bed, my pillow, my mattress, my curtain, etc., and my dog at my feet. Why would I want to go anywhere? I still don't understand why anyone goes anywhere. As the old man said to me when I was extremely young and still traveling the world, actually, when I first set out on my world's journey, I met this old man on a ship. You know, it really was. And he said to me, it was the ship? I forget, the MV Waterman? No. And he said to me, young man, there's only two reasons to travel, funerals and weddings. Other than that, you'll find out it's best to stay home. The guy was right. At least he wasn't that much of a misanthrope where he didn't even go to funerals and weddings. So there it is. So where's that article, guys? Come on. You sent me the wrong one, I think, or whatever. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com. You didn't think I'd be in today. I know. I understand. You're glad I'm here. You're all glad that I came in. And why not? It's January 1st. By the way, people say to me, what do you think 09 is going to be like? Personally, I think 09 is going to be, I don't want to curse it, I think it's going to be a fabulous year. Because 09 is a lucky number. In the Kabbalah, 9 is a lucky number. I know you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? I'm just telling you, 9 is a lucky number. And I think that 09 is going to be a very lucky number for the West. I personally believe the West is going to turn on the Islamists in a gigantic way. I think they're going to crush the Islamic leadership around the world. I think they've gotten away with murder for long enough. And I think from Denmark to Los Angeles, the West is going to turn on these Islamic bums and throw them out of the country.
Savage.
So we're talking about all the different things that we're talking about here on the Savage Nation. It is a live show, incidentally. This is not a replay. It's hard to tell. One thing I got to tell you about my team, though, is that we are the best in talk radio. The absolute best is the Savage Nation in many ways, and most particularly in replays. There are people in the business who are so careless and so care so little about you, the audience. I have heard replays this week of shows that were run before the election. That's how much the contempt they have for you. My replays, when I'm not on, like my best ofs, are made so that you don't know the timing or what time they were, meaning when they were first presented. I make it so that it fulfills you as a listener, whether I'm on live or not on live. And I want to tell you, I know the difference because I'm as good as it gets in talk radio. It's as simple as that. There's nobody better. I'm the best person in talk radio, bar none. And nobody has ever taught me, and I don't think anybody ever can. And I'm telling you like it is. I am great in talk radio. So there, I've said it. So now Lima, Peru, most overrated tourist destinations on earth from the LA Times and by readers now. I got to read you some of this. And the reason I like this is because, I've been tempted to go to Lima or to Caracas or this and that, but I just know what's going to happen when I get there. And here it is. So the reader writes, I fulfilled a lifetime dream and went to Peru. Much of the trip consisted of an organized tour. So I decided to spend a few days in Lima before meeting up with the group in Arequipa. I have never disliked a place as much as I dislike Lima. It is filthy, dirty, the air is redolent of diesel fumes, and the noise of thousands and thousands of taxis, all honking simultaneously, while belching fumes from their clattering engines, and the streets were full of tired, tense, and unhappy-looking people rushing about. Moreover, what the guidebooks describe as the best museum in the city, the Museo de la Nación, was mainly closed, as was the best art museum. The weather I can describe only as clammy, which in conjunction with the dirt in the air was barely tolerable. He says, if there is a hell, it has to be modeled after Lima. The next on the list is Macau. And it says, Macau is mostly populated by old rundown Chinese casinos, and most of the area looks like the older parts of Vegas. We ended up spending most of our time in the room or out shopping. Blah, 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 blah. It's interesting what people, you know, really, once they get there, what they see, what's going on. Now, I could ask you what's your most overrated destination, but I don't know if that's such a great, you know, it's an overrated place, period. I mean, most places are overrated except your home. I guess people go, I mean, my kids went skiing in Park City, Utah. They're adults. That's where they went for the holidays. I'm going to tell them they shouldn't have gone. They like skiing, so they went skiing. That's where they went. It's Park City, Utah, and they loved it. I think they're still there. And they like skiing, so they went there. When they were little, I took them to Lake Tahoe. I remember I never skied because inner city kids don't ski. You know, remember the old movie, White Men Don't Can't Jump? Inner city kids can't ski, by and large. I mean, there are exceptions. The only people who skied when I was a kid were like in the, you know, the ski patrol in the military or Austrians. It was just coming in to America. It was, you know, I know the whole story of the skiing. Guys came back from World War II who were in the mountain division, and basically they created Vail. These guys were real pioneers in the ski industry. They had some vision, but it's turned into like a Coney Island of the slopes. You know, clatter, clatter, bang, bang. You know, where's the? I don't know. I love snow. To me, snow is something almost religious when you experience it in its quietude and magnificence. But when you got 20,000 people clattering with cocoa in their hands, who needs it? I don't even go to the mountains anymore because I don't want to hear ski-doos zipping by with fumes. Why? I am talking, when I went to Tahoe years ago, I would do snowshoeing. I liked it, almost in near-blizzard whiteout conditions. I had a compass in my hand so I could get back to the lodge. I was always I liked that kind of thing. I don't mean I'm a big explorer, you know, that likes to get lost in an avalanche. Speaking of that, I have very strong feelings about those guys who got lost in the avalanche. You know, and maybe I shouldn't express them. I'm sick and tired of paying $200,000 per rescue. They're tempting fate. You're going out into a wilderness area in a snowstorm, and, oh, there's an avalanche because your ski-doo caused the noise caused an avalanche, and we're supposed to spend $200,000 to rescue you so you could be on CNN with your mother crying? I'm sick of it. If you want to risk your life, risk your life. If an avalanche comes, too bad, goodbye. Everyone's a victim now. But if you want to talk about Iran, you want to talk about in the Middle East, we could get really upset today if you'd really like to do that. And here we have a caller who wants to talk about the Middle East thing. Albany, New York. David, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. You're on the air.
Bring some points up about the Middle East that very seldom is mentioned in the American media, and that is that almost every Protestant church in the world, and the Roman Catholic Church, the Russian Orthodox churches, the Greek Orthodox churches, have all condemned Israel for its harsh treatment of the Palestinians. Prior to this incursion...
Slow down. Now, let's get real here. Do you want Israel to cease existing?
No.
Well, but Hamas does.
The solution that almost every country in the world has endorsed is that Israel withdraws to the 1967 borders.
All right, let's talk about that. Israel withdrew from Gaza. What happened to Israel?
They gave up a fraction of what they were supposed to give up.
Right, they gave up a fraction, and what they got was 7,000 rockets from that fraction. So if the Hamas could launch 7,000 rockets from that little sliver of land called the Gaza Strip, how many rockets do you think Hamas could launch from the West Bank?
Most military analysts say that those rockets are nothing more than firecrackers.
I'll tell you what, my friend. Let's try one on your house. Tell me if it's a firecracker when it comes through your chimney.
Israel.
If they're firecrackers, how come people are dying from them?
Well, the Roman Catholic Church says that Israel should withdraw to the 1967 borders. All the land that Israel occupied since 1967.
Well, let them say all they want. It's very nice. They could say anything they want, but I don't know that the Jewish people want to commit suicide. I thought they did for a while. I'm quite surprised that they're showing any sign of life.
It's not mentioned in the American media that almost all the Protestant churches, the Episcopal Church, the Methodist Church, the Lutheran...
Well, you're talking about certain divisions of the Protestant Church. You're talking about the Protestant Church that's become so liberalized that it has ceased being a religious organization. It is a social organization.
where Jesus was born, and that's where Jesus died. So they have a say. They know a little bit about the
That's Middle right. East. They have a say. You have a say, and I have a say. But ultimately, it's the people who have a say. And I don't think Israel's going to disappear, no matter what anyone says.
They just said the land that they stole in 1967, they should return it, and that will pretty much...
Wait, hold on, David. I've heard all of these arguments. We're not going to get anywhere by repeating them. Let's start again. Israel gave back the Gaza Strip. In fact, some do-gooder liberal Jews invested $9 million in their own money to buy the greenhouses from the Israelis and give them to the Palestinians, thinking that the Palestinians would grow orchids and roses for the world market. Within 1 hour, the greenhouses were stripped bare of everything and destroyed, and the area was turned into a launching pad for rocketry. What in the world do you suppose would happen if the entire Judea and Samaria regions were given to the Palestinians? What would happen, truthfully?
Would most likely be the result, and it would take away from Al Qaeda its hatred for the U.S. for our unbalanced support of Israel. So it would.
Wait a minute. So Al Qaeda is on the warpath again because of Israel. That's why. Let's see now. All of the Islamic hatred around the world toward the West is because of the Jews.
Well, I would say about 70% of it. If we had a
really balance... now, wait a minute. Hold on now. You're a brilliant man. Does this include the massacre of Hindus in India about 4 or 5 weeks ago in Bombay? Was that because of the Jews?
Well, you notice how they attacked the Jewish synagogue, so it had to involve, I mean...
Yes, they killed two innocent men and two innocent women and hundreds of innocent Hindus. But it had nothing to do with Israel. You know that. Even a bigot like you knows that.
Our unfair treatment...
But even a bigot like you understands that the Islamists attacked Bombay because they want a piece of India that you can't even name because you're so ignorant. Tell me the part of India that's controversially claimed both by India and Pakistan.
I believe it's Kashmir.
Well, you do know. So you do know it's Kashmir. Now, how many Jewish temples are in Kashmir?
Excuse me?
You heard me. It has nothing to do with Jews. It has to do with a piece of land called Kashmir. But the Islamists in Pakistan say it's part of Pakistan. The Hindus say it's part of India. It has nothing whatsoever to do with Jews. Let's go to the Philippines, where the Islamists have been waging a war for a long period of time. In fact, it goes back to at least several hundred years in the Philippines, where Islamists have been at war. In fact, they've been fighting the Catholics of the Philippines forever. In fact, if you look at the war that we fought, I believe it was the Spanish-American War. Do you remember what happened in that war when the American troops, the U.S. Marines, went into the Philippines and they were shooting their .38 caliber guns at drug-crazed Islamic rebels and they couldn't kill them because they were so high on drugs that they went back to the drawing board and they had to develop a larger slug that would kill even a drug-crazed man, and that's when the .45 caliber sidearm was developed. So this had nothing to do with Israel, did it?
Almost every major Islamic attack around the world, the Israeli situation is dragged into it. And the United States.
Wait a minute. I make a statement going back 100 years before Israel existed, when the Islamists were trying to take over the Philippines. And again, you go over history even. You can't be that diehard a bigot that you can't even see reality, can you?
Michael, my father is Jewish. My father is a German Jew.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. It's alleged that Hitler was part Jewish.
All the Christian churches.
And many people are self-hating Jews. In fact, the entire liberal establishment is probably percentage-wise filled with more self-hating Jews than any other population in the world. The American left is filled and run by American self-hating Jews. You know that, and I know that.
Well, if Israel withdraws to the 1967 borders, all the nations around the world would endorse that, and they pretty much have. And so,
they'd endorse it, sure. And if the Jews walked into a gas chamber, they'd endorse that too.
Well,
if the Jews walked into a gas chamber, they'd say, "Good Jew." The only good Jew is a dead Jew. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you and I say. It's a sovereign nation. It's not disappearing. The whole thing is built upon jealousy. Can you explain to me why the other Arab nations live in such destitution? You're going to blame it all on the Jews?
Well, if you check, it's kind of weird.
Why is it that the average Egyptian is impoverished? Why is it that the average Saudi is impoverished and there's a princely class. Why is it that wherever you go in the Islamic world, there's a ruling class and then there's a class of slaves? And couldn't it be possible? Couldn't it be possible that this whole thing is built upon the jealousy, the fact that the Jews took a desert and turned it into a Garden of Eden, and they showed that the people who had occupied the area before them for well over 2,000 years after the Jews were thrown out by the Romans did nothing with it but leave it as a wasteland, and they're jealous of the fact of what Israel created in such a short period of time? It can't all be based upon thievery and muggery and homicide.
Well, Michael, you said it. They took. You said it with your own mouth. They took someone else's land, and that's going to radicalize people who have a grudge, you know? So,
well,
I mean,
now let's go into the issue of who took what. Let's start with facts. You're now going to deny that the Jews were there in biblical times?
The land that the Jews took in 1967 is...
Hold it. I asked you a question, and you're not answering it. Now, you're going back to 1967. Let's go back to the year 67 A.D. When were the Jews thrown out of their homeland, and by whom?
I think it was around 70 A.D., the destruction of the Second Temple, when Titus...
Well, you're pretty good. That's why I said A.D. 67. You're pretty sharp. So you know more than you let on to. The problem is your conclusions are faulty, for one reason. I, too, would say let's gladly encourage the Israelis to give back the West Bank to the poor, impoverished Palestinians. But let's start with even Judea and Samaria. Can you name some major cities in those territories, which you call the West Bank, which I call Judea and Samaria, which have been occupied by Jews since biblical times? Name two cities.
Haifa?
No, come on now, stop it. Now you're groping.
I'm not really privy to what's going on in Israel because I'm not there, but what I'll say is that...
Well, wait a minute, you are an expert on Israel. You just said if they gave back the territories they allegedly captured in 67... there would be peace on earth and goodwill to man. The Islamists in the Philippines would lay down their swords. The Islamists in India would lay down their swords. And all of the other 13 places where Islamists are killing people would all be at peace, whether it be in the African continent or any other continent. The Islamists would be at peace if only the Jews would do what you say. You know that that's not true.
Well, I'm saying that my church, the Roman Catholic Church, says that Israel should return the land. Every other church, and with the exception of the evangelical Christians, that they don't have any love for Israel or the Jews. They just want the Jews to convert to Christianity.
And, well, I've heard that lie about the evangelicals over and over again, and I resent it, frankly. I resent it very deeply. That even the most devout supporters of Israel are the evangelical Christians, and yet even they are put down by people like you. And you question their motives, like as though you know their motives better than they do. Could it be that they just simply have a love for the Jewish people, that they have no devious plan in mind for Jews in the end of days?
They also have irrational interpretation.
Well, let's go to the liberal churches you just mentioned, all these liberal wings of the churches. They also believe in gay marriage, don't they?
No, the Methodist...
Yes, they do. Oh, yes, they do. Oh, yes, they do. The mainstream Protestant churches all believe in homosexual marriage. You're going to tell me that that's supported by biblical edict?
Well, the Roman Catholic Church doesn't believe in it, and that's my church, and they say Israel should return the land, and I think that...
Well, let them say all they want. I could say the Vatican should give back the land for the people they stole it from. Why doesn't the Vatican give back the gold that they took from other people?
Well, football field.
Why do they live so well in the Vatican? Where'd they get the money from? You want me to go into the Catholic Church of the Vatican? We can do that, too. How can they hoodwink so many millions of poor, impoverished people in the third world into believing they're going to be saved if they send their money to Rome? You want to talk about that? You think that's fair?
They'll be saved if they put their trust in Jesus Christ, the Father, Son, and Holy
Spirit.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ is wonderful as long as they send their money to the priest to go to the third world and Milan. I know too many poor Latino women here who clean houses and kick money up to the church, and those bums go and molest boys in the third world. So don't tell me how pure and holy your church is.
A very small percentage of priests have engaged in that, but I can see
that's
that.
Correct. It's about 3%. That is absolutely correct. It's about 3%. You're 100% right.
Because the church endorses Israel, you're going to try.
That's
to
right. But if only the Jews would give up the West Bank, everybody would be dancing in a peace parade. Well, all right, my friend, have a nice day. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I mean, the big news is that an airstrike killed a Hamas leader with a 2,000-pound bomb, killed him and two of his many wives. According to his religious beliefs, he's allowed to have more than two wives. And two of his children and some neighbors, too, apparently got it. Apparently, these terrorists like to surround themselves with innocent civilians and use them as human shields. And the bomb then set off many other weapons inside the building because he had a bomb-making room or wing of his house in the tunnels. And I ask you how this ends. I don't know how it ends. You know, a year ago I said there has to be a two-state solution. A year ago I said there has to be a side-by-side. But after the Gaza was given back and the Palestinians decided not to use it as an opening to a state of their own, but to a continuous war to drive the Jews into the sea, my beliefs have changed. And believe me, I want to tell you something. I have no relationship whatsoever with any Israelis. I have no support whatsoever from the Israeli government. They will not come on the show any more than the Bush administration would, or the Democrats will. They don't like me any more than the Bushies did. So I don't get anything by taking this position. It's one man's opinion, and you have to be real about politics. You can only say, you know, and you can talk in a bell jar all you want, as though you're in a laboratory. This is a sovereign nation. Let's forget the past. Let's live in the present. In the present. Tell me how this is going to get resolved, other than killing off the leadership of Hamas, down to the last man, killing off the snakehead, and then when you kill off the snakehead, maybe if the people are given jobs and if the people are given some way to make a living, there could be peace from that area. Otherwise, this will go on for 1,000 years. It will never end. And the Israelis decided that that's the only solution. Otherwise, they're going to die. It's kill or be killed. It's them or us. That's how they're looking at it. They're not you sitting in a house somewhere in Marin County or Albany, New York, having a discussion anymore. They gave back the Gaza Strip. They got 8,000 rockets in return.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
There was another Israeli airstrike. You can see it off in the distance. This is less than a mile. This is less than a mile from where I'm standing. I'm going to let you listen to this and watch it. You can hear the aircraft overhead right now. Tremendously powerful blast, less than half a mile from our position here on the Israeli side of the border. And this has been the scene now for the last few hours. The Israeli military says that it has hit more than 20 targets today alone. Among some of those targets that have been hit, they say, have been the homes of militants, homes that have been used to manufacture as well as to store weapons.
Well, there it is. You know what's going on. The Israelis assassinated a Hamas strongman today in its first assault on the major leadership of Gaza's rulers. And the crushing aerial bombardment goes on, and it's very controversial for obvious reasons. Nobody on earth likes war. Nobody can cheer the death of innocent civilians. However, when you back us to a wall, and it's them or you, and you've got the enemy hiding amongst their wives and children, and building bombs under the skirts of their daughters, what are you supposed to do? Now, I know many of you are saying give back the West Bank and everything will be fine, but that doesn't work. They gave back the Gaza Strip, and what they got was not orchids, but they got a missile. So this is a problem that no one can solve. You can't solve it. I can't solve it. I believe the only solution here is killing your enemy. That means the leadership, and then giving a massive infusion, billions of dollars, to the Palestinian people to build a life for themselves. Only when you root out these snakes can there be peace in the Middle East. At least that's one man's opinion. If you want to talk about the world's religions as the basis for all of this problem, you can do that as well. And I've had that argument on the show before. I will inevitably get the communist who will say that religion is the problem, that if the world were to eliminate religions, there would be no such strife. And that's a very tempting argument. However, when you temper the argument with the reality of the fact that the Soviet Union was once Russia, and of course now Russia again, and after it ceased to be a Christian nation, it became a Soviet nation, which was built upon no religion, because Karl Marx said that religion is the opiate of the masses, and he replaced religion with a worship of the state. That religion, called communism, caused 100 million deaths. So you can't say it's religion that causes man to war with each other. It's man who causes man to war with each other. It's man. I mean, it's encoded in us. Evil is encoded in mankind. And I don't think we're going to eliminate it, no matter how many Berkeley liberals there are on Earth with their peace institutes. You know, the day they get mugged by a carjacker in Berkeley, they suddenly realize what their liberalism has wrought. It happened in Berkeley, by the way, today. A certifiable do-gooder lib was shopping at the co-op, came out to her van, her old Volkswagen van. I mean, this one was a real left-winger by all appearances. A fellow was waiting for her with a gun to carjack her. She grabbed his gun, twisted his hand, and said, I'm going to shoot you in the you-know-what. Well, he didn't take no for an answer. Listen to this news report.
A man in Berkeley learns he picked the wrong woman to rob, and despite pulling a gun on his victim, he left running from the scene with stab wounds. It happened this afternoon outside the Whole Foods store in Berkeley near Telegraph and Ashby. NBC Bay Area's Jody Hernandez is live this afternoon with her amazing story and what police are saying tonight. Jody.
Cheryl, first of all, I want to make it perfectly clear. Police do not recommend fighting off an attacker the way the woman at this Whole Food Markets did this morning. But they say the victim in this case was very courageous, and in this case, it paid off.
No, I was just like, ah! Don't take my car.
Harmony Gates demonstrates how she stabbed a carjacker as he tried to drive her van away with her inside. Gates was loading up her groceries in the parking lot of Whole Foods in Berkeley this morning when an armed man attacked her.
I started screaming, help, 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 and he punched me. And I grabbed the gun right there, and I twisted it in towards his crotch, and I said, hey, I'm going to blow your ass off if you don't leave right now.
The attacker didn't back down. Instead, he got in the driver's seat and tried to take off. That's when Gates grabbed a pair of scissors and started stabbing.
You're not going to get away with this, buddy. And I mean, I have never stabbed anybody, and I've never been confronted by a gun before, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing with that, but it just seemed like I don't care. This guy can't get away with this. I'm not going to let him get away with this.
The stabbing appeared to work. The man took off running. Police say he tried carjacking two more victims and finally got what he was after.
Found someone coming out of their house, saw that they had their car keys, and carjacked that person.
Swollen and bruised, Gates is otherwise all right. The slender woman turned warrior says she didn't know she had it in her.
I feel lucky. He could have shot me, you know? I mean, maybe it was really stupid or whatever, but I also feel pretty proud of myself. And I kind of showed myself what I'm made of.
Another day on the job.
Well, there's a woman, a liberal, who may now become a listener to the Savage Nation in Berkeley. I take my hat off to this woman. See, she didn't know what she was made of till she was carjacked. Then she became a mad woman with a scissor. The guy had a gun and she had a scissor and stabbed him till he left. I mean, it's an amazing story. You don't know what's in you until you're attacked. Nobody knows what's in them. It's the old joke, you know, what do you call a liberal who's been mugged? And the answer is, of course, a conservative. There's old jokes like that. They're not funny because they consist of violence against people. There's also the issue of this Charles Barkley guy who got arrested allegedly for driving a DUI And his excuse to the cop was that he was racing to for sex, and they should let him go. That's a story. DWI Charles. Charles Barkley, arrested on suspicion of drinking, driving Scottsdale, Arizona, earlier, told the cop he ran a stop sign to pick up a woman. I was going to drive around the corner and get sex, the former NBA basketball superstar allegedly blurted to cops. After getting slapped with the suspected drunken driving charge, Barkley gamely tried to wiggle out of it, telling a civilian police employee, I'll tattoo your name on my behind if the employee helps him avoid the rap. Barkley also allegedly asked the arresting officer if he thought the woman who got into his car moments before he was stopped was hot. Cops later found a handgun in Barkley's car. Now, it's interesting. I don't know who this guy is. I ran into him once on CNN. We were debating in 2003. Immigration was the topic. And it was a respectful discussion. And interestingly enough, because he was a sportscaster, he took the side of illegal immigrants against me. I was the bad guy. And I made too many good points for this dummy. So at the end, he took a shot at me. Listen.
Michael's one of them guys who really, really smart, who's a dumbass. Like, he want you really in.
Wait. Listen, no. I am jumping in
Look,
here. Michael Savage, listen.
You, ignorant
Michael
basketball
Savage,
player.
Thank you very
you're
much for joining us here today. Sir
yeah,
Charles
dumb
is leaving us again.
Player.
Hey,
go dribble a
both
ball.
Of you, time out. We'll be back in a moment. But.
But the guy in the back room let me speak. I don't know who that was at CNN, but I'm sure he has been fired since. Those were the days when I was still permitted on television before the government media complex was told by the power structure, Michael Savage doesn't exist. We now live in the Soviet Union where people like me are simply disappeared from the electronic universe. But little did they know that the talk radio network universe still exists very strongly, and that my audience has grown, not diminished, since that day. See, the fact of the matter is, other than the syndicator I have, there are no independents in the business who have made any headway whatsoever. And it's all because I'm with an independent syndicator that I'm still on talk radio. If it was not for Talk Radio Network, I would have been gone a long time ago. And the fact of the matter is, it's you, the audience, that demands reality. I give it to you. I give you my reality. Whether it agrees with yours is another story. But at least you have one man's opinion, not filtered by the government. The government media complex is ever present, stronger than ever. It's almost like the ex-Soviet Union, where there were two state newspapers, Izvestia and Pravda. That's exactly what we have now in the media, with very rare exception. So if you want to talk about that, call somebody else. 1-800-449-8255. We are also talking about places not to travel to. There was an interesting article in the LA Times about the worst places or the most overrated travel destinations. And I'm going to read you another quick one called Bora Bora. I've been there, and I couldn't help but laughing because this was true. It says, the writer to the newspaper wrote, my experience on the island of Bora Bora haunts me to this day. Upon arrival, I was met by large packs of feral dogs. They were starving and diseased. The dogs near the port were waiting for passengers and some relief. Others from the ship joined me in filling paper cups with water to give the thirsty dogs drinks. When I complained to a French official, I was told the common excuse, they belong to no one and they belong to everyone. On a trip around the island, trash and debris, some dating to World War II, were evident on the roads and beaches. Bora Bora, you need to clean up your act. Most passengers agreed that the scenery was beautiful, but that the lack of compassion for the animals, along with the abundance of trash, made this island visit a nightmare. Hear, hear, 100% right. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Many topics are fair game on the show today. That's why I came in. Originally, I was going to talk only about the Middle East and the Barkley tape. We found it on YouTube from 2003, which I think is worth playing, and we did. The travel destinations that are overrated, excellent. This out of the Drudge Report just now, the Palestinian terrorists are within range of Israel's nuclear power plant, and they're aiming their rockets at Israel's nuclear power plant. You know, you talk about Armageddon. Talk about Armageddon. I mean, I know the Palestinian propaganda is that these are harmless rockets that have no warhead, which is utter nonsense. It is possible that a lucky strike into the nuclear plant could set off a chain reaction, and that we could have a nuclear explosion that would kill many Palestinians as well as Israelis. And if this is what you'd like in the Middle East, well, go and celebrate that your Palestinian friends are playing with firecrackers that cause no harm. And here's England, a once great nation, an empire at that, a boozy, boozy nation. They had a 9/11 call every 7 seconds in the country yesterday in England. Every 7 seconds, alcohol-induced mayhem, bloody faces, sluts laying in the gutter, too drunk in the cold to even get up. You should see these pictures. Beating each other up, drunk in the streets, the death of the West. It's unbelievably disgusting to look at Britain, what it once was and what it's become. Every 7 seconds, a 9/11 call in alcohol-induced mayhem. Go take a look at your once great England. You know, that's why we used to play There's No England Anymore. In fact, get There's No England Anymore. That's what I'd like to hear. It's a fabulous song because one day we'll be playing There's No U.S. Anymore the way things are going in this country. Take a look what's going on here.
I've been told of kings and days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore.
All the wars that once won and lost don't seem to matter very much anymore. Unbelievable, by the Kinks in the 60s, no less. Louder!
All the lives of the people running round their castles are burned.
Punk rock, some of it ruled. I mean, it was good. That's when they could still write. Instead of this rubbish, everything about sex. Sex and sticking a needle in your arm. How about some social themes? Anyway, it's sickening. You see these pictures out of England every 7 seconds, beating each other up, drunken sluts in the gutter, sleeping in the cold. They don't even know where they are. What a nation. That's what they fought Hitler for. So their granddaughter wound up a slut in the gutter. They fought the Huns and they wound up with their daughter in the gutter, drunk. Drunk in the gutter. It's like the Bible come alive in England, what happened from liberalism. 50 years of liberal socialism, and you have the sluts laying in the gutter in England. They don't even know they're drunk in the gutter. There's no England anymore. I went there, but it was closed. It's like an amusement park. Tony Blair took down the Union Jack. He took it off British Airways. It was a little too English for him. You rat bum, you third-way piece of garbage, you. It was Tony Blair's Labour Party that destroyed England. It ripped the heart out of England. Tony Blair, good friend of the Clintons. They eviscerated England of its manhood, so they're left to be drunks in the gutter. They're like the Eskimos of the Western world. England's becoming one gigantic skid row. Las Vegas, Bill, you're on the Savage Nation.
I wanted to thank you for coming in, for showing up, and being present and accounted for when you know, I served in the Air Force and the Army, both two branches. One important thing you learn in the military, and that is, number one, you lead by example. And you're doing that for the industry, for radio.
Well, hey, you know, just because it's... I know, everyone's off, so they're off. There's a war going on, and they're still off. Why are they not on the air today?
Because they're not going to lead. They're going to follow. They're followers, and they can't even show up. I just want to touch on one more thing. In my opinion, the government as well, they lead by example. And when you have leaders like a ragbag, you know, group of soldiers are led to lead by example and set the standards, therefore everybody else under them.
Well, that's a big story. It certainly is a big story, Bill, a gigantic story. I want to send you a New Year's present, which is a copy of my book, Psychological Nudity, which is still up on my website at a lower price. And I want you to have it for the New Year's because the stories are fabulous, and I know you're going to love it. Dead Man's Pants, whatever. You can still read it, even though it's January 1st. 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. Whatever you want to talk about. But the latest headline off the Drudge Report is a very alarming story. Don't ignore it. You know, shake off your hangover, which is that your friends in Gaza are firing rockets at their nuclear power plant. Gaza rockets put Israel nuke plant in battle zone. Go ahead, pray for it.
Savage.
Well, it's getting very, very, very bad right now. And, you know, if you're a Bible-reading person, you want to really get frightened. You can start talking about Armageddon. But the story came out moments ago on Drudge Report. It's linked now from the Times Online out of England from January 2nd, 09. It just went up. Gaza rockets put Israel's nuclear plant in battle zone. They're talking about the top-secret nuclear facility at Dimona. And the Israelis are concerned that if the rockets or a rocket should hit a nuclear facility in Dimona, there could be a nuclear reaction. And certainly millions of people could die. Hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom will be Palestinians, many of whom will be Arabs. After all, a nuke doesn't distinguish based upon race. And this is getting to a point where the superpowers are going to have to do something here. Obama is going to have to step in. Now, people are saying the left is mad at Obama because they say he hasn't said anything. And I said to you last week, of course he's speaking. He's speaking volumes through his silence. He has given the green light to the Israelis for this air campaign for many reasons. The main thing is he wants this ended before he takes office in January. He wants it ended. So he gave Israel the green light. I love the left is so naive. They think he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what to do. If you actually believe this is because Bush, you're crazy. Bush constrained Israel all of these years. Bush's sympathies were with the Saudis. You could say Bush was, in essence, controlled by the Saudis. And you might argue the opposite is true with Obama because the Democrats have always been closer to Israel than the Republicans. By and large, the Democrat Party is much closer to Israel than the Republicans have been. I mean, just study politics. So Obama, whether you like his politics or not is irrelevant, is a very bright man. And he can read the tea leaves. And he says to the Israelis, I'm sure he said, go ahead. This was a joint decision by the Bush administration and the Democratic administration for the Israelis to take out the Hamas leadership. However, it's not happening. Now, yesterday they did target one of the warlords and killed him. They killed him, two of his four wives and four of his 12 children. And today, now the rockets, they say they're afraid they're going to hit Dimona, which is a top-secret nuclear facility at Dimona. The world cannot afford a nuclear showdown in the Middle East. Now, the fact is that Israeli military fears that Hamas has acquired dozens of Iranian-made Fajr 3 missiles with a longer range. It's Iran, stupid. All of this is emanating from the psychopathic maniac mullahs and their freak show in the form of a mad jihad. A mad jihad is behind all of this. And I suspect, or it is possible, you could take any one of those phrases that I just made, that the Israelis, before this is over, will strike Iran. That Obama would like this behind him as well. That the next time the little man in his platform shoes gives a death to Israel speech with his throwback bearded Muslims, that a cruise missile will be in their beards before they can say a Happy New Year. It's entirely possible that this entire campaign in Gaza is a diversion for the bigger attack against Iran. It's certainly possible. I mean, war is as much deception as it is war. Study any war, any battle, there are a lot of diversionary motions. And I don't have to give you any examples. I'm sure you know of many diversionary acts in war. Israel striking Gaza, it is true. They're bombing buildings where Hamas is headquartered, it is true. They killed the leader of Hamas, it is true. That does not mean that they're also not planning a strike against Iran at the same time. And it also is certainly possible that Obama's given them a green light to do both at once. And get rid of it all before he takes office to clear the slate of this insane mullah dominated mad jihad in Iran who has destabilized the entire world. And make no mistake about it, a mad jihad, the leader of Iran, will smolder the entire world to fulfill his destiny. He would like to see the whatever Mahdi come to power, the 15th, 16th, 17th, whatever their psychopathic belief system is that he follows there. That in order for this Messiah to appear, the world must go up in smoke. You're going to call this a rational leader of a nation? He is Hitler reincarnated. I told you that if you study history and you study mysticism, certain evils repeat themselves through time. And it comes back in different forms. Ahmadinejad, if you want to call him that, the mad jihadist, is a reincarnation of Adolf Hitler, who was a reincarnation of perhaps Attila the Hun, who was perhaps a reincarnation of King Haman of Persia. Over and over again, they keep repeating. This evil spirit comes back upon the earth to plague it. And you have to go to the Bible to find the solution to this problem. You're not going to get your answer from an editorial page in the Los Angeles Times. You're going to get it from the Bible. And it's in there. If you only read it, you'll see what's coming. All you got to do is read Joshua and you'll see what's coming. And the sun stood still and the moon stayed until the nation had avenged themselves of their enemies. Read Joshua 13. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thy hand. There shall not a man of them stand against thee. What is that all about? What is that all about? This is a repeat of history itself. This is a repeat of history itself, and I do not think it's going to be the Jews into exile again. I do not think it's going to be A.D. 70 with the Jews being driven out of Jerusalem. I do not think we're going to see a repeat of A.D. 70 with a repeat of history. I do not think we're going to see that again. And if you want to study the world's religions, you can do that. You can blame religion if you want, but I would say it's the fault of the apple, not the fault of religion. It is the fault of the apple. It's encoded in our genes to be violent. Man is a violent creature. We all know that. And whether it's an offensive or a counteroffensive, whether it's your view that the Crusades were initiated by the Christians, which is a falsehood, or the Crusades by the Christians were a counteroffensive against Islam, is only a matter of perspective. Again, this is a historic issue that depends upon your perspective. You have to go back to Pope Leo I in the year 440 to understand what the Christian church was then and what was going on then, and understand about the advance of Islam then and how Christianity reacted to the advance of Islam then to understand what happened then. But to call the Christians to this day, as many radical Muslims do, crusaders, is very intriguing. To this day, the radical Islamists call all Christians crusaders, all of you. Men, women, and children, you're all crusaders. And so you could say, well, okay, what do we do now? Well, I don't know. What do we do now? What do we do now? What do we do now? What are the crusades going to do for anybody? Well, what do we do now? We'll see what we do now, because it's not your hands or my hands. We're just simply observers. We're simply observers. But to say that religion is the fault or religion is the cause of all violence is very tempting. Very tempting to say, oh, if there was no religion, there wouldn't be war. The Soviets believed that. As I told you, all you got to do is study the origins of the Bolshevik Revolution, where they said, Marx said that religion is the opiate of the masses. Let's get rid of religion and man will live in peace. Then let's get rid of the capitalists and man will live in peace. Let's kill the capitalists, let's kill the church leaders, and the world will have peace. Well, instead, 100 million people died in the last century because of the new religion called communism. So, as I say, it's not religion. It is the fault of the apple. And at a certain point, it becomes who's stronger. That's who lives. That's all there is to it. At a certain point, it becomes live or die. It's them or you. It's as simple as that. It is as simple as that. It's like that woman in Berkeley who was carjacked outside the food market today. Here's a nice middle-aged liberal woman, probably a lifetime feminist. A guy tries to carjack her with a gun. She takes the gun in his hand and twists it towards his crotch and says, I'll blow your new what off. Well, he doesn't give up. He jumps in her old Volkswagen van and speeds away with her in the back. She grabs a pair of scissors and starts stabbing him. not knowing it was in her. When it comes right down to it, nobody knows what's in them until their back is to a wall. And that goes for both sides in this issue. Now, you got fanatics on both sides, it is true. But the problem here is that Israel does not want a nuclear war. Some of the fanatics in Hamas do. God forbid one of their missiles, whether it be a Grad missile or the Iranian-made Fajr 3 missile with longer range, hits the nuclear installation at Dimona, you will have Armageddon. Tell me that's something good for humanity. And so, with that as an exit point, the United States is now going to act. My guess is something happens in the next 24 hours that's on a major league diplomatic level. What that will probably be more of the same. There'll be a truce called. Hamas will rebuild its missile stores. The mad jihadist will send new missiles to Hamas. And Israel will be back where they started from, with a putative victory and killing some of the leadership and the world hating them even more. Since the Jews are hated anyway, and since the world condemns Israel anyway, they may as well go and kill all of them right now. And I say all of them, I mean the leadership of the snake. That's what they're going to do. My guess is Israel will not stop, that the world will try to stop them, but they will not stop. That's what I think is going to happen. And whether it's true or not is almost irrelevant. History is very interesting. And you have to read a Psalm of David sometimes in moments like this. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in straight paths for his name's sake. And though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This Psalm of David was at one time read to the troops in the United States of America before they went into battle, before the degenerate witches and psychopathic perverts took over the U.S. military from the highest level down. Before the men went into battle, they were anointed by priests with the Psalm of David. They were calmed by the Bible before they went into battle. Today, our fighting men do not even have this comfort. Instead, they have degeneracy. I'll be right back. Savage. The Savage Nation. I came in today. I wanted to be in today. I don't know how anyone could sit still who has a brain and not talk about what's going on in the world. What, does the world come to an end because it's January 1? We have to talk about these things. And that's why I'm here for you. Rob not the weak because he is weak, neither crush the poor in the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause and despoil of life those that despoil them. Very beautiful stuff, the Proverbs. You have to read it and see that there's some wisdom in the Bible, the Rock of Ages, you see. There's a reason this book survives. It's not that everyone who reads it is an ignoramus. You know, you could easily say to yourself, you're too intelligent, you don't need the Bible. Well, what do you need? CNN? You're so smart, tell me what gives you comfort in the middle of the night. What gives you comfort? A drug? Another drink? I mean, what gives you comfort? You think everyone who reads the Bible is an uneducated moron? Well, good luck to you because you're wrong. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he must restore sevenfold. He must give all the substance of his house. He that committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He doeth it that would destroy his own soul. It's interesting, but there was a great compassion in many of these proverbs. It wasn't all, you know, hellfire and brimstone. But it was written by men. Much of the Proverbs were written by men. They were wise men. There are wise men today as well. There are wise men today as well, but there are many wicked men. When the wicked spring up as the grass, and when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they may be destroyed forever. That's why the newspapers are going out of business. It's not to say that everyone who writes for a newspaper is wicked. But the institution itself has become wicked. When the wicked spring up as the grass, and when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they may be destroyed forever. It is not that everyone who writes for a newspaper is wicked, but they write wickedly. They support wickedness. All they support is wickedness and evil, as do the politicians by and large. Here we have an attorney general in the state of California. The top lawmaker, Jerry Brown, who would be governor, has the nerve to go against millions of voters who said no to gay marriage in Proposition 8. And his job, by the way, requires that he uphold a legitimate ballot measure. But no, he says, I will go against the people. I will tell the people their votes are nullified. I will tell the people that I am more powerful than they. I will defy the people because I am in competition with any Tewsome Newsome for gay money. I'm in competition with any Tewsome Newsome for the gay lobby money. I am in competition with any Tewsome Newsome for the governorship. And therefore, I will do what is wicked. I will tell the people that their vote is nullified. And we live in a democracy, the top lawmaker in the land, the top law enforcement official in the state, sides with those who would throw out the votes of millions of people. He could have said, I disagree with the vote, I find the vote repugnant, but I have to uphold the law, but he didn't do that. So what is it, what does that tell us about a nation where state leaders, federal leaders, local leaders defy the people? What do the people do in a country like this? I'll let you figure it out. Georgia, New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on from WOR. What is on your mind tonight?
Bernie Madoff. He's being treated like royalty. Ankle bracelets. What would happen if I'm in New York and I rob a bank or any financial institution?
Bank, if you robbed a gold bracelet from one of Madoff's granddaughters, you'd be put into the tombs overnight and probably be beaten up in the tombs.
Right. Unbelievable.
Well, you know why Madoff is being treated royally. Did you hear what I said earlier, why I think the alleged thief of $50 billion and the ruination of hundreds of thousands of lives is permitted to live in his $9 million Park Avenue or condominium? Co-op, rather. Do you know why?
Why?
Why? Because the judge probably had money invested with him, and he told the judge that if you give me a light sentence or let me stay at home, I'll make sure you get yours back.
They all want a piece of the action. I got a story about that's comparable to your dead man's pants.
Yes.
Well, we
don't have time for it right now. Bernie Madoff should be wearing dead man's pants right now. He should be walking around with a barrel around his chest with suspenders if he's guilty of what the federal government says he's guilty of. You know how many lives that man has ruined?
Yep. And I would, sure. They're going to give
All right, I don't want to go in that, so. You know, I don't have a lot of time left in this hour, but I'm going to read you one passage from Zechariah. I know that maybe there's too much Bible, but when it gets this bad, and I start reading that rockets could hit Dimona and set off a nuclear explosion in Israel, which could kill hundreds of thousands, including Palestinians, I start to say maybe Armageddon and the Bible is correct. But if you read Zechariah, as it's stated in the Old Testament, it says this, and it's one paragraph, just listen to this. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. If those are not the symptoms of a nuclear bomb, I'd like to know what are. Now, that was written thousands of years ago by one of the biblical prophets, Zechariah. And Zechariah maybe foresaw this day. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. That can only mean one place, and that's the land that is ruled by the bearded mullahs and the mad jihadist, Ahmadinejad. And when it comes down to an existential crisis like this of live or die, them or you, us or them, it's going to be might makes right. And whoever strikes first, hardest wins. There's a certain point, the tipping point, as they say in modern parlance. Once that tipping point is passed, it's too late. Where the tipping point is, I don't know, but I have a suspicion that the Israelis found out that it was passed not too long ago. And that is why I believe Obama joined with Bush to give Israel the green light. And I certainly would not be surprised, let me put it to you that way, if this is just a diversion for the bigger act to come against the mullahs and the madman of Iran. God bless America.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Happiness is just around the corner. Just come to San Francisco. They have a conference on happiness and its causes. It's only $545 for a three-day pass to learn from these goofballs how to be happy. They divide happiness into 16 emotions, including personality traits such as optimism and cheerfulness. I have to go to a break now already, so early? Okay, I won't. I'm going to just blow through the stop set and keep going. Let's see. According to this jerk who's running the conference, the moods consists of optimism and cheerfulness. Well, you won't find that in me. State of mania, maybe. Moods of euphoria and contentment. Yeah, right. Sensory pleasures such as visual, gustatory, and auditory. And three states of mind with no English translation. Schadenfreude. Ooh, that's so advanced, like I never heard of Schadenfreude. How PC. Schadenfreude, German for feeling good about the pain of your enemies, like I haven't talked about the Naches. You got Naches. That's Yiddish for joy and offspring's accomplishments. And Fiero, Italian for what you feel when you've met a challenge. I never heard of that one. Who ever heard of Fiero? I never heard of this. Naches doesn't mean joy at an offspring's accomplishment. This is like a goy telling you what Naches means. This is a non-German telling you what Schadenfreude means. This is a non-Buddhist telling you what Buddhism is. You hear this? This is really stupidity. These people are so stupid and clueless, they belong in Obama's transition team. This idiot says, I believe we can understand life a lot better if we make distinctions, not by just saying, I'm not happy. Ooh, hey, there's a Pulitzer in this one. Wow. Like I haven't told you for years that we are stuck with one word for love. This is not from the article. Let me put the article down. I know it was written by skillful fools who can con idiots. I can't imagine. I like to go to the conference just to see the morons who show up on how to be happy. You could just imagine the bag ladies are going to show up. Oof, God, it's horrible to see human frailty. I don't like to mock people. Believe me, I do it only because I have to. I don't really want to do it. But if it wasn't for the foibles of mankind, I'd be out of business. You know what I'm saying? That's why Voltaire stayed in Paris, was to mock the foibles of the Parisians in his time. And look, there's a statue of him in many museums. I saw one in Los Angeles. I was there last week. I had seen that I think it was the same picture of him in the chair, the same sculpture of him in a chair. When I was a youngster and did the big trip to Europe, I remember seeing it in the Louvre. Maybe several were done. Who knows? What an incredible thing that is. You die and they sculpt you in a chair forever. Maybe someone will sculpt me with a microphone. You get to know. Here's the thing that bothers me about dying. I didn't mean to get into this, but I want to get into it for a second. I keep thinking about it in this way. Here's what I can't understand. Let's say there is a heaven and hell. Okay, let's just say for the minute there is. You're punished if you were bad, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better not shout. You better not pout. Telling you why Santa Claus is coming to town. But let's say you suspend whatever, and you're old already and scared, and you start to believe in, and you go to heaven with the gold chair, and the Knishes waiting for you, whatever, and your mother's cooking, and you believe that. But if you're bad, you go to the other place. All right. Now, here's the thing. Let's say there's reincarnation. I'm trying to use logic here. I know it doesn't work, though. I've tried it 1,000 times. So there's nothing left but alcohol at that point. Let's say there's reincarnation. What's the good of it if you don't know it? In other words, I'm sitting here before the microphone and you're sitting there listening to me on the speaker, right? All right, let's go down this road together. Let's say you believe in reincarnation. How come you can't So how come you don't know what you were before? What's the good of it then? In other words, let's say you were something else before and you were rewarded or punished and you're now a man again or a woman. You didn't become a bug, let's say, or a louse, a lice, or a Democrat, whatever. You became whatever you are. You didn't. So there you are, right? How come you have no knowledge of what you were before? And since you have no knowledge of what you were before, who cares if there's reincarnation? That's what I've been thinking about. You mean you know it for a second? You go before like God. I'm not mocking you, God. Don't get mad now. I don't want to be struck dead under my. But let's say you go before. All right, like Savage, get up here. All right, let me. Here's the whole list. All right, read it out to me. And then the angels are, he did this, he did that. You know what he did that time? Have you any? He did this, he did that, he did that. All right, buddy, we balance it out. He's not that bad. He missed the mark. He committed some sins, but he's not evil. Evil is another story. Evil are people with Marcy Park type events in their life, not this. All right, overall, you did okay. So here's what we're going to do for you. You're not coming back. The good news is you're not coming back as a roach. All right. You're not coming back as a Democrat. Oh, thank God. You're not coming back working for the Clinton administration. Never. All right. That's thank God I'm not going to be a worm. But the bad news is you're going to come back as a human being again. Oh, God, no. The Buddhist wheel all over again. Do I have to start in the Bronx? Yeah. Well, this is what we want to tell you, Mike. Here's the story. There is no time. The whole thing is it's all a racket. There's no time. Clocks have no meaning. Dolly was closer to the truth. They're all bent because the hands move, but nothing else moves. So here's what it is, Mike. You're going to be reborn again in Mount Sinai Hospital in the year you were born to the exact same parents, and you're going to go through the very same life again. No, I don't want that. Why? It was so bad? You want me to make you a bug? No, but do I have to do that all, everything again? The meatball on the wall, the whole thing, the fights in grade school, all over again? Loved by the sewer plant and info in Alley Pond Park? Affirmative action? The radio career? Why, that wasn't good enough for you? Would you like something else? No, God, I'll take it. All right, so that's what I think. I think that in essence, this is it. Whatever you're living now, you're going to live again and again and again forever through eternity. There is no past. There is no present. There is no future. And that's it. So the whole point is I don't know what it is.
Savage.
My father had a small store. It was actually a stall within a store, an antiques market. They sold everything from junk to reasonably nice things. And he had like three booths put together. And he sold primarily clocks and statues, bronze statues, 19th century French, which I learned to appreciate greatly. And he taught me a lot of things as I was a little kid there. And you could still learn from this. If you go to a museum and you look at sculpture, take a look at some of the statues in the museums and look at the hands and look at the feet. Dad taught me that you can judge an artist in a painting or in a sculpture by the hands and the feet. He said many people can paint the body very well and the face very well, but they can't do hands and feet. And it's always been true. We went to a Los Angeles County Museum last week and I saw a great collection. It was a fabulous piece made out of marble. And you got to look at the hands and feet. It's astounding to see what great art really is. Anyway, so that's I grew up in that kind of environment and working in the store. And various people would come in, odd people. You know, in those days, you're talking about a very unusual childhood. And many of the customers happened to be gay. They were decorators, so I was exposed very young to very nice people. And you have to understand, I have no anti-gay bias. I'm just against gay marriage. I want to make that very clear. And my father never had any anti-gay bias. He never said a nasty word. In other words, when the guy left, he was different than the other men. The other men were gruff and they were rough, and these guys were usually well-dressed, and they had a sort of cologne on. And I didn't know that, you know, why they were different in that way. And he never, ever made a disparaging remark about the decorators. I got to tell you off the map, right off the bat, rather, I was not raised to hate anybody. I got to tell you that. So amongst the variety of humanity that would come through that market, and it would get very busy on a Sunday, mainly on, you know, gapers, onlookers. It was almost like a Coney Island in there because people loved the oddity of it, the strange things that they would find. Were many different people. But during the week, I remember once I took off from school, I went in with my father, and a black man came in, which was very unusual in the sense that he didn't have a lot of black customers in those days. I'm talking about the 50s. Man was very well-dressed, very thin. I can remember him to this day, and very polite and very quiet and soft-spoken. I didn't know who he was. So the man comes in. And my father didn't know him. He didn't know my father. She says to my father, how much is that one? My father says, 300. How much is that one? He says, 500. How much is that one? 800. How much is that clock? 1200. How much is that one? 900. How much is that one? He went through like 15 pieces. The man quietly didn't chisel him. He said, I'll take them all. Would you please make a note of it and write it? The guy like bought 20 pieces or whatever. It was a huge sale. Well, it turned out that this gentleman, this black gentleman, was an antique dealer himself in either North or South Carolina. And he came to New York, you know, to buy and bring it down there to sell, you know, at a higher price. Just as my father bought from importers and marked it up to make his living, this fellow went to New York to buy from, you know, a retailer who was relatively inexpensive in a poor neighborhood to bring it to his more up-end, higher-end. So to make a long story short and to conclude it, as the gentleman is leaving and he wrote a check, the man leaves. My father says, thank you very much. My father brings me, says, come over here. I want to tell you something. He said, you just learn. If you learn from this, you'll learn a lesson for the rest of your life. I said, what's that lesson? He said, never, ever judge a man by how he looks. Give every man an equal chance. You just don't know who people are.
Savage.
Let me just tell a 30-second dog story because it's amazing. I said, what could I tell the people that they'd enjoy about the dog? Well, it's just that. I come home. It's the same every night. He gets so crazy. And, you know, dogs are beautiful. I've always had dogs who get excited when they're young. But this one is different. He runs. And you ever see a rabbit run down a pasture? How every number of steps he leaps like with a hop? That's what Teddy does. He has a hop in him. I don't know where the hop came from. He's more rabbit than dog in a way. He runs and then throws himself up with a little hop and tugs at my clothing like in a comic book. And in the beginning, I'd say, Teddy, stop. You're going to rip my clothing. You know what I've come to? I say, Teddy, go ahead, rip my clothing. I don't even care. I let my arms hang down. He can rip my pants. He can rip my... Yeah, he doesn't mean to rip it. He's just trying to say hello. And he keeps going and going and going till he starts to wheeze. I have to stop him, and I have to grab him. I'm afraid the dog's going to, like, stroke out from excitement. But you know what? Why I don't stop him anymore? I'll tell you why. Because I know one day, unless I die from global warming or from a terrorism attack, one day he'll be old, and one day he won't be able to run, and he won't be motivated to run anymore, like my other dog, Snowy. She can hardly move. They become old like we do. They get arthritis, and they become, oh, you're home again? Oh, I had a rotten day. Don't even bother me. Look, I'm in the room. That's what they become later on. So I said, if this is what he is now, then enjoy it. Enjoy his joy, because in what, 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever it may be, assuming that the earth doesn't melt down because of Al Gore's hot air, the dog won't be able to do it. And what? I'll look back and say, my God, I remember when you were little, Teddy, and you used to run in the driveway until you almost got a stroke and jump and nip at me? Yeah. So, you see, you're lucky if you can look forward and see the future, because sometimes it can help you enjoy the present more. And it's the same with the past. If you can look back on the past, it can help you enjoy the present more. People say that you should live here now, be here now. You know that phrase, be here now, sort of like a hippie thing. Well, they're 100% right, but the best way to be here now is to remember the past and think of the future.
Savage.
Anyway, for whatever the reason, I'm back in my San Francisco studio. I can't wait to get home whenever I go away. I don't know what it is. I'm a homebody. You know, like, I'm a guy, once you get to know a certain area at a certain point in your life, for better or for worse, it's your home. And when you get to know every corner of the San Francisco Bay, as I know from boating, and I can name every bird on the bay. I don't mean by name. I could mean by species. I can name the birds of the bay. I know the points, Point Blount to wherever you want to name it. I know the coves. I know the names of most of the trees and many of the plants. This is called my home. I am not going to let people drive me out of here. I don't care what they do. I don't care what they say. That is why people fight for their homeland. This is my homeland. And L.A. is really a strange place to me. I got a new I didn't hate it or anything like I did it over Halloween. That was a product of the decadence and the partying, truthfully, which I can't take. It's a great scene in L.A. for a younger person. It's a loud, hysterical, you know, city. But I don't know how anyone could live there after the age of 30. I tell you the truth. I just don't know where they'd have to end up. Certainly you can't live in down, you know, you can't do the scene down there. It's unbelievable. I was in an Italian restaurant Saturday night. All right, the food was fairly good. And it was a change for me from my normal depressing old person, San Francisco area Italian restaurant where, you know, that's what it is. I can't eat when people are screaming. They were screaming, and I mean screaming. The decibel level was louder than, let's say, two 1,500-horsepower MTU engines without any covers on them, without exhausts on them. I never heard anything like it. I don't know how people can eat around it. Screaming, yelling. I can't understand why young people enjoy that kind of scene. And then there was, like, music behind it on top of it all. But all right, the owner was a friend of my son, and we had a nice time, and you know, for that regard, I kept going out every 5 minutes with a glass of wine to stand in the street, to stand out on the boulevard and look at the bums and the other people going by. I could hardly eat. But, you know, if you like poseurs, if you like watching the phonies, it's a nice place to watch poseurs. The guy who pulls up, for example, with the Escalade, and he jumps out with a 6'5" bodyguard, and the bodyguard looks as big as a mountain, and he precedes the guy who got out of the car. Now the guy walks into the restaurant and he looks around. He scans the landscape. Doesn't order a drink. Everyone, oh, hello, hello, there, hello, Bob, hello, you. And he has a single name, like Dodger. Hello, Dodger. Hi, Dodger. Hello, Dodger. Hello, Dodger. And the bodyguard stares at everybody. Then Dodger doesn't buy so much as a glass of wine. Dodger then leaves. Why did he leave? Well, you figure out why. Then Dodger leaves, and I ask a few people, who was that guy with the big bodyguard? He says to me, we don't know, but he's got a lot of money. I said, how do you know he has a lot of money? He says, we heard he has a lot of money. So I inquire a little further of some of the limousine drivers who were there with some of the other young conspicuous consumers. And one said to the other, well, that isn't even his bodyguard. That guy works as a bouncer down the street as a club, and he does this on occasion. So as you start to uncouple the onion, as you start to unfold the onion, you get the picture pretty clearly of the scene. I, you know, that's it. If you enjoy that kind of thing, God, you know, go and enjoy it. The girls know how to dress. I got to hand it to them, you know, and there's an awful large supply of pointy shoes in Hollywood. That's all I can say. It's the land of the pointy shoe. But these young girls can't get married. Nice-looking girls, they can't get married. Why can't they get married? There's a thousand reasons. What guy is going to marry someone who is, let's say, been on the market, let's put it delicately, for so many number of years? Who wants to marry a party girl from Los Angeles or from Hollywood? No matter how beautiful she is, what is her chance of getting married at age 29 to 30? Very, very low. And so there it is. I mean, you know, I don't know how the guys find anyone. I don't know how the girls find anybody. I don't know who finds anybody anymore.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Listen to this headline. Top New York poet kills self. First of all, it's an oxymoron to say top New York poet. There's no such thing as top New York and poet. Okay, let's start with that. But let's take it on its face. Top New York poet kills self. Liam Rector. Hello? I'm sorry, I never heard of him. I've read a little poetry in my life. Never heard of the man. A critically acclaimed poet. What does that mean? Four psychos in Greenwich Village with a beret acclaimed them in some literary journal? But wait, it gets worse. Liam Rector, a critically acclaimed poet who taught at some of the nation's top colleges, institutions of lower learning, I might add, committed suicide in his Greenwich Village apartment, police said. Rector, 57, put a shotgun to his head, police said. Come on, shotgun to his head? You know, for a poet, I'd expect something more creative than to copy Hemingway, even in his suicide throes. He could have chosen pills. He could have thrown himself from the World Trade Centers, but they're not here anymore, of course. His poems and essays appeared in the Paris Review. That's published in an apartment in Flushing, New York. The New Republic, the since-disgraced New Republic, who made up a story from Iraq to debase our troops. Plowshares, you know what plowshares is? We shall turn our swords into plowshares. Well, they want to read the next couplet in the Bible, which says we shall turn our plowshares into swords. They didn't get up to that page in the Bible yet. Maybe I should start a literary journal called Swords. And, of course, the Hudson Review. That was big in 1953. Let's see some of the great colleges this top poet taught at, because they say he taught at top colleges. Let's see. Bennington College in Vermont. I think the last thing they did of any note was create pottery in 1879. Taught at Columbia University, the home of diversity. The New School, Communist Front. And Emerson College in Boston with a dwindling student body. Anyway, that's the story. I'm sorry he had colon cancer. I'm sorry he had a bad heart. But worse than that, the obituary is a disaster. For a guy who's a good poet, he could have chosen another way out. I guess that's what I'm mad at. Shotgun in mouth. That's passe. I mean, Hemingway did that. That was horrible. That shook me up when he did it. Would you ever kill yourself with a shotgun to your mouth? Ugh, what a way to go. You want to talk about selfish? Let me explain something. And I'm going to try and do it now in a non-comedic fashion, or a non-angry fashion, a non-sarcastic fashion, a non-sardonic fashion, a non-ridiculing fashion. I've been there, and I haven't done that. Primarily as a result of what liberalism almost did to me and my family. They almost destroyed me, but not quite. I rose from the ashes like a phoenix. But what I found down in those ashes of depression, and I'm talking 20 years ago, I'll level with you right now, were many, 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 many things. There was a lot of ferment in my life at the time. I got very deeply into religion at that time, and what I discovered was the greatest sin a man can commit is suicide. Did you know that? Suicide is a greater crime than homicide because you're killing God's property. It's not your property. You don't own you, Johnson. You're owned by God. Now, the day you learn that, not only do you gain an awful lot, but you lose an awful lot. You know what you lose? You lose the burden of thinking that you're so important. You lose the burden of thinking that everything in the world depends upon how you feel or whether you made a good do-do that day. You find out that you're just a mote in the mire like everybody else. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. In many ways, we're all just ashes and ashes and dust to dust. But in some ways, some of us struggle to overcome that and to create something of meaning while we are alive. But the bottom line here is suicide is the worst crime you can commit. But put aside the religious connotation of suicide. Any man who is married who commits suicide is the biggest coward on the planet in terms of what he's going to do to his wife. Any man who is married and has children is an even bigger coward in terms of the curse he puts upon the third generation of his own family by committing suicide. That's my reaction to it. That's why I don't have any sympathy for suicides. You hear me? You hear that? Never talked about it before. Paul, San Diego, good challenge. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was wondering what you felt about this. Socrates basically committed suicide by drinking hemlock when he was...
Good point. Well, first of all, Greeks, as you well know, the Greeks of those days are somewhat irrelevant in some ways today.
But sometimes suicide's your only choice, isn't it?
Not my choice. Maybe it's yours.
But Socrates' choice.
Well, are you suggesting you would like to commit suicide and you're asking me for dispensation?
No, I'm just saying, no, the topic is suicide, and I'm just saying that devil's advocate, Socrates committed suicide in a way because he could have escaped, and he chose to drink hemlock because the sun was on the hill. And I just wanted to see what you thought of that.
Well, okay, I'll give you another example. Ernst Rommel, the Desert Fox, the Nazi general, okay, was a great German general from the point of view of Germany. But Ernst Rommel was part of the plot to kill Hitler towards the end of the war. You know that, right?
All right.
He was. And he was revered by the German military and by Hitler himself. But once he was found to be part of the plot to kill Hitler, he was called back to Berlin, and he was given a choice. The choice was to go on trial and be executed and have all of his property would have been seized by the Nazi government, or to commit suicide. He chose to commit suicide, but that's a little different in the sense that someone was pulling the trigger for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Can I have a theory? Can I base
it? Well, no, wait. Hold on. Don't jump over that. There are exceptions to every rule, as we well know. I'm talking about a man who does have the choice of free will to commit suicide. Ernst Rommel had no free will any more than Socrates had free will. Socrates was given a choice. Either you commit suicide by taking the hemlock or we'll seize all of your property, etc. So in other words, it wasn't just a spontaneous desire to kill himself because he was depressed.
Do you find it kind of like parallel the story of Socrates and his apostles and let's say some other type of religion. I mean, I find it kind of uncanny the way in which he had these apostles around him and the wisdom in which he brought, you know, and then here he is, he has to kill himself in order, like you said, to protect himself from these tyrants and from taking everything that he had already, you know. It's, I don't know. Am I wrong or?
What are you saying? You're putting him in the context of who? Are you saying he's like who? Like the story of Christianity?
A Platonist, like a Platonist. I don't want to use Christianity because everybody uses that same person, but like Platonism or, you know what I mean? Like Plato.
Platonism? You mean Plato, correct? You're talking about Plato?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think we're getting off the topic here. Would you commit suicide if you had free will?
Yes.
You would?
I believe in free will. I wouldn't kill myself.
I'm saying, but do you have a family?
Huh?
Do you have a family?
Yes, sir.
Children or just like mother, father, brothers, sisters?
I'm a 40-year-old grandfather.
You are a 40-year-old grandfather?
Yes.
All right. Well, I want to tell you something. I don't know if you're really serious about being depressed or you really think. Just think about the effect it would have upon your grandchildren. They would carry around in their head. Every child thinks about their father or their mother. Where do I have to go? I really don't want to talk about suicide unless you want to talk about a nation's suicide, the suicide of a nation, as exemplified by our nation. All right. Savage. There are people on Earth who spend every waking minute trying to figure out how to kill us, harm us, and destroy other people. Their entire life, from the morning they wake up until they go to sleep at night, is how to kill, how to maim, how to hurt, and how to humiliate other people. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. We have a nation that spends millions of dollars to keep an alcoholic stew bum alive if he should trip and break his hand in the streets. EMS, the ambulances, and Mr. Smith, and how are you, and rush him to the hospital and around, get the oxygen. And there he is. Every life is precious. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars later, and there's the bum in the street puking on himself again 3 weeks later. Every life is precious. But at what cost, I ask myself? It's like everyone votes. Yeah, that really makes sense to me. It sure does. That's why we get the kind of leaders we have. Everyone votes. Like there are certain rules I would establish as to why everyone shouldn't vote. Like let's start with an IQ test. That would be the minimum. Okay, number one, speak English. You can't speak English, you don't vote. That means you don't know what's going on. You have no right to be in the country to begin with, but you don't want to learn a language. Then you don't have the right to vote. That's A. B, an IQ test. Minimum 100. Okay, 100. 100 IQ should be the breaking point. Number three, you're on welfare, you don't vote. Because you're only going to vote yourself a raise at the expense of those who are paying your salary. Okay? You lose the privileges that you had before you went on public assistance. That might save America right there. But then I think about life, man. You know, everything is so precious. And then we got people on this earth, radical Islamists. I never really encountered this in studying history going back perhaps until a time in history of Attila the Hun, who, let's say, ransacked every city and killed everyone in the city that he invaded. But to be facing an enemy of such barbarism is hard to believe for a society that is so you would say evolved, but it's actually quite barbaric itself. We in the West are living in a sort of post-Christian barbarism. Now, that's a very interesting topic that I wanted to get to. But the sexual liberation movement, the progressives, let's start with the progressives. What do they advocate? Sexual liberation. What has it led to? Homosexuality, transsexuality, bisexuality, abortion on demand, round-the-clock pornography, soft drugs, euthanasia for anyone who's not perfect. And so, therefore, we are living in this postmodern liberalism, which has become, in essence, a form of cultural barbarism. Under the guise of tolerance and acceptance, we are actually a barbaric civilization. And all of the traditions that we grew up with are being steamrolled over by these cultural degenerates. Abortions become the norm. Divorce becomes the norm. Pornography is acceptable. Drugging yourself is acceptable. Being a single mother is acceptable. Teenage sluts is acceptable. Bisexuality, homosexuality, transsexuality are considered lifestyle choices. And now the Dutch want to go a step further. It's not enough that they have sex museums and sex clubs. It's not enough that whores advertise their bodies in storefront windows. It's not enough that marijuana is legal. No, that's not good enough. It's not good enough that euthanasia is rampant in Holland going down to the age of 12. What are the last frontiers for the cultural degenerate barbarians? It's child pornography and engaging in pedophilia. A new group, a new party called Charity, Freedom, and Diversity, with emphasis on the last word, because I've told you for years, I was the first one to tell you in my first book, The Savage Nation, that diversity is a code word for perversity. The newly formed Charity, Freedom, and Diversity Party advocates reducing the legal age for sex from 16 to 12. The Dutch pedophiles are also demanding that child pornography and sex with animals should be legal. They also said that citizens should be allowed to go naked in public. And their party platform is, we're going to shake The Hague awake. Now, their ultimate goal is to abolish any limits on the legal age for sex with any child at any age. Their argument is that a ban just makes children curious. This is the world in collapse. This is the West in collapse. This is the world that we are trying to make sense out of. It is impossible to make sense out of a cultural barbarism of this kind. And so when you hear the word progressive, or when you hear the word diversity, you've got to understand who is behind it. And you've got to understand what you're fighting for. And you've got to understand that this is connected to the rise of radical Islam throughout the West. They are absolutely part and parcel of the same exact situation. Now, let me explain that in more detail for those of you who want to hear it. How do I relate the rise of radical Islam with its restrictions, with its throwback mentality, and with its hatred and its murderous nature with the progressive movement in the West? It's quite simple. You have to think about biology to understand it. You have to think of the AIDS virus, which is symptomatic, actually symbolic, rather, of what I'm talking about. The AIDS virus is actually quite symbolic. It's a retrovirus, and it invades the body, but it doesn't really cause an infection for a while. It lays in wait. And while it lays in wait, the retrovirus, the HIV virus, it starts to attack the immune system itself. And only after the immune system itself is weakened can infections arise within the human being that has been infected with the HIV virus. This is what liberalism is. Liberalism is, in essence, the HIV virus. And it weakens the defense cells of a nation. What are the defense cells of a nation? Well, the church. They've attacked particularly the Catholic Church for 30 straight years. The police attacked for the last 50 straight years by the ACLU viruses. And the military attacked for the last 50 years by the Barbara Boxer viruses on our planet. And so when they weaken our defense cells, what happens is the opportunistic infections arise because our surveillance is not permitted. The reaction of our white blood cells is diminished because they're not permitted to react because they've been weakened by the liberal virus. And consequently, infections arise. So what are these infections? Well, you can name many of them. Now enter the arise of radical Islam into the Western world. How does that fit in? It is a counterpoint. It's actually part of God's plan, as I see it. I know this is shocking. Many of you can't follow where I'm going, but I'll go where I have to go in order to traverse through this jungle of thought. This is all part and parcel of God's plan. God is saying to us in the West, I have given you the Garden of Eden. I have given you the milk and the honey that is promised in the Bible. And you have despoiled the land I have given you. You have destroyed and despoiled the Garden of Eden that I have given you. And so therefore, what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce an element into this Garden of Eden so that you can see there are consequences to your behavior. And they are going to kill you. They're going to cut your throats. They're going to keep doing this until you realize how far you have gone astray. That's how I see it. It's amazing. But I mean, many of you don't want to accept this. Many of you want to think that radical Islam has arisen in a vacuum. It hasn't risen in a vacuum. It is arising as a counterpoint to the cultural barbarism of the West. Make no mistake about it. Yes, you can also include territorial expansionism, if you wish, meaning the desire for Islam to sweep across the planet as it had once done before when it conquered 2/3 of the planet through the sword and through the flame and through throat cutting. They're just doing it again, only this time they're achieving it not so much with the sword and the flame, but with the very techniques of liberalism that are in place in our societies that have gulled us and made us lay down our normal weapons of survival through the sword of tolerance, through the sword of acceptance, through the sword of liberalism, if you want to put it in that category, the radical Islamic movement is causing the greatest upheaval in our society and our Western societies that has been seen since the Industrial Revolution. We are going through, in essence, a radical religious revolution. And either the people in the West come to understand that they're going to disappear, their children will certainly not survive, or their grandchildren won't be here as we know it. They will not be here. If you take the arc we are on, and you see the kind of leadership that we don't have, and you see the kind of appeasement going on from our so-called hawkish leaders, I see a very terrible prognosis for our children.
Savage.
Hot-headed men who explode with anger seem to be at greater risk of having a stroke or dying, new research shows. Their risk is even greater than men who are simply stressed-out type A personalities. But here's the funny part of it. If you're a hot-headed man, you can get a stroke, according to these morons who did the study. But if you're an angry woman, listen to this. Angry women, on the other hand, don't run as high a risk of having a stroke. What is the point of this stupid retrospective epidemiological study? Again, from the Framingham study, over and over, the Framingham. These guys have gone through that data. For 40 years, people have made livings on this garbage. Framingham, Massachusetts, they did one study over and over again. They go back and they look at the data. They try to cull it for yet another grant, you know. And here's what they figured out, these schmucks. Hot-headed men who explode with anger seem to be at greater risk of having a stroke or dying, but not women. Next, they'll tell us in a new study of the Framingham study, again, it's from Massachusetts, they have found that hot-headed men who are Republicans seem to be of having a greater risk of having a stroke or dying than do Democratic women. Oh, yeah, it's lucky I was born with a natural sense of impossibility. And here's what the study's author said. While we're confident it's accurate, it's not appropriate to say it's definitive. And you wonder why I left science or why science left me. Science today is all politics, number one. There's almost no science left. Yes, there's technology and there's applied research, but there's no basic science left in America. While we're confident it's accurate, it's not appropriate to say it's definitive. A comedian in the Catskills couldn't get away with that.